Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
It's Vanessa Denha-Garmo, host of Epiphany on our affiliate station, Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan, filling in for Teresa Tomeo this morning. So happy to be with all of you here today. We have a couple guests joining us this hour here on Catholic Connection. As always, Father Mitch Packwell will be with us to talk about cultural connections. We'll be talking about the Democratic Socialist Zohan Mamdani winning New York City's mayoral race. There's an article in the Catholic News Agency we'll be referencing about that and what this means to our country and what concerns we might have about such election as Catholics. Joan Lewis will be joining us, Top Vatican News, and Joan's Rome, of course, her blog, always available for us. We'll be getting an update on what's going on in the Vatican from her. And then heading into EW10 Radio Extra, I'm going to have my coach's commentary focusing on a urban summit I attended yesterday and what I took away from that urban summit that was focused on mental health and drug abuse and the correlation, especially with our teens. And, you know, what I took away from that is the foundation of our Christian life, where faith, family, fellowship is central to solutions in today's cultural problems. And I might talk a little bit with Father Mitch about that if I have time. I can just kind of brief about that. But I'm going to kind of give you that summation as we reflect, even though the summit, very well done, great speakers, wasn't, you know, coming from a Christian Catholic perspective, but there was so much in there that I took away from Catholic Christian perspective, which people mentioned. They mentioned God, they mentioned love, they mentioned care for fellowship. And so I'll get into that in my coach's commentary, but what it means to us as Catholic families to help our children navigate the culture today, the pressures they're under when it comes to the access to marijuana that's so readily available to them, the influences of social media and these selfies and these forward-facing cameras that there has been a link, studies that show ever since forward-facing cameras came out and selfies became so prominent that depression and anxiety among teens have drastically increased. And so we'll talk about that too in my coach's commentary and what that means to us as Catholic Christian families and parents and conversations we really need to be having with our children. So I'll be talking with you about that. My coach's commentary, my Epiphany Insights. I publish my Epiphany Insights blogs on my website. People ask me all the time if they could, you know, get more information when they hear my coach's commentaries. I write them in blogs on my website, epiphanycommunications.com, and on Substack. So you can see them there as well. I'll be updating my last coach's commentary from the other day and today as well. So those will be up on my website soon. Cy Kellett will be with us, host of Catholic Answers Live, new book on how to talk about Jesus with anyone. How to talk to Jesus with anyone. I love that because we're all called to evangelize the faith. We're all called to bring others and help people have an encounter with Jesus. And sometimes it's not easy to figure out how to do that. That will be in the EWTN Radio Extra hour. So how to talk to about Jesus with anyone. And, you know, it's one of the things that we all should be doing, but probably aren't or not enough, you know, and it's not exercise, which we should be doing, eating right, of course, calling our moms. No, spreading the good news about Jesus Christ and his salvation. This job isn't optional. Like I said, as baptized Christians, we're all called to do this. So we'll be talking with Cy Kellett about that as well. But right now, it's 4 minutes past the hour here on Catholic Connection. And now time for the news on EWTN. And we're going to kick off this newscast with a weather update from Tammy Trillo.
in the Northeast. Temperatures will stay in the low 50s with some lingering lake effect showers across upstate New York and northern Pennsylvania, with partly sunny skies elsewhere. A cool, crisp day across the mid-Atlantic with temperatures near 60 from Washington, D.C. up through Philadelphia. In the southeast, sunny skies from Atlanta to Orlando with temperatures in the mid-70s and low humidity. Along the Gulf Coast, a few passing clouds but no major rainmakers. Spotty showers linger in the deep south from coastal Texas through southern Louisiana, otherwise warm and humid with temperatures around 80. A powerful cold front has settled into the Midwest with temperatures only in the 40s and wind chills dipping into the 30s. The northern plains stay cold under clear skies with temperatures in the 40s, while the southern plains, including Oklahoma and Texas, warm up into the 70s. Warm, dry, and sunny across the southwest with temperatures in the mid to upper 80s for Phoenix and Las Vegas. Checking California, sunshine statewide with temperatures in the upper 60s along the coast and in the mid 70s inland. And in the Pacific Northwest, steady showers are expected from Seattle to Portland with highs in the upper 50s. That's your national forecast. I'm Tammy Trujillo.
In Vatican City, Pope Leo XIV met with Thursday with Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas, marking their first in-person meeting. The two leaders discussed what the Vatican called the urgent need to end the conflict in Gaza and ensure humanitarian aid reaches civilians. This from Vatican News. The Holy See press office described the meeting as cordial, with both leaders reaffirming support for a two-state solution, peace in the region. President Abbas also visited the tomb of Pope Francis at the Basilica of St. Mary Major, laying flowers and honoring the late pontiff's recognition of Palestine. The visit coincides with the 10th anniversary of the comprehensive agreement between the Holy See and the State of Palestine, an accord affirming Palestinian self-determination and the shared spiritual significance of Jerusalem. There is celebration and condemnation around the world following Zohan Mamdani's election as mayor of New York City, Roya O'Neill reports.
Mamdani, the Democratic Socialist Muslim of Indian descent who was born in Uganda and a New Yorker since he was seven, an American citizen in 2018, Mamdani is now mayor-elect of its largest city. London Mayor Sadiq Khan called the election a win for hope, as both men have faced attacks because of their religion. In Israel, the National Security Minister said Mamdani's election would, quote, be remembered as the moment when anti-Semitism overcame common sense. I'm Rory O'Neill.
Two New Jersey men are facing charges in connection to an alleged terror plot. Natalie Migliori reports.
Acting U.S. Attorney for New Jersey Alina Haba says the pair were part of the same online communication group as the suspects arrested in connection to the alleged ISIS-inspired plot in Michigan, using the platform to discuss their own separate plots. Haba says the 19 and 20-year-old suspects plan to travel to Syria to pledge themselves to ISIS. One of the suspects is charged with conspiring to provide material support to a terrorist organization, while the other is charged with transmitting violent anti-Semitic threats on the internet. I'm Natalie Migliori, NBC News Radio.
Some Senate Republicans say they're close to reaching a deal to reopen the government. Mark Mayfield has more.
The shutdown has been going on for 37 days and is the longest in history. Senate Majority Leader John Thune said yesterday that a mini funding package that could get bipartisan support is nearing completion. He met with Democratic negotiators Tuesday night in an effort to find a solution. Some lawmakers are now hopeful a deal can be reached and approved by Congress next week, but that depends on how quickly negotiators can get others on board. I'm Mark Mayfield.
And here's Mark Mayfield with the latest technology news.
Instagram is being ordered to stop using PG-13 to describe its new teen accounts. Matt Mattinson explains.
The Motion Picture Association reportedly sent a cease and desist letter to Instagram's parent company Meta over the use of the rating. It said the claims the new setting is guided by the PG-13 rating are literally false and highly misleading. The MPA said it can't be aligned with its rating system because it doesn't use the same curated process and instead heavily relies on artificial intelligence. It argued that any dissatisfaction with the Instagram setting would cause the public to question the integrity of the MPA's rating system.
Perplexity is getting a warning from Amazon about its AI-powered shopping assistant, Comet. Amazon says Comet is not identifying itself as an agent when it's shopping on Amazon. Perplexity argues that Amazon is trying to stifle innovation. And Anthropic reportedly expects to see $70 billion in revenue by 2028. The AI giant recently inked deals with Microsoft and Salesforce. Tech Report, I'm Mark Mayfield.
Tesla's annual shareholder meeting is today, and there's a major vote coming that could either make Elon Musk the world's first trillionaire or see him part ways with the electric vehicle maker. Musk's $1 trillion performance-based compensation package is at stake, as well as his continuing control of the company. The tech billionaire has hinted that he might leave Tesla if his pay deal is blocked. Ahead of today's critical vote, Norway's Fund, a major Tesla investor, announced it would vote no. Both the Powerball and the Mega Millions jackpot are sky high. Mark Mayfield has that story.
There was no grand prize winner in Wednesday night's Powerball drawing, so that jumps to $467 million with a cash option of nearly $221 million. And then there's Mega Millions with an estimated $843 million up for grabs in the next drawing on Friday. I'm Mark Mayfield.
In Peoria, Illinois, the diocese has officially broken ground on a new cultural center honoring Archbishop Fulton J. Sheen. The historic Spalding Institute will be transformed into the Fulton J. Sheen Experience, expanding the current museum into a $9 to $11 million facility funded entirely by private donations. The new center will feature interactive exhibits, personal artifacts, and extensive archives of Sheen's radio and television work. Bishop Louis Telke says the project will deepen public understanding of Sheen's legacy and draw thousands more visitors to Peoria. The center is expected to welcome up to 15,000 visitors annually, celebrating the life of a man who inspired millions to live boldly for Christ. McDonald's is seeing a boost in sales after bringing back some of its favorite items. Same store sales reportedly increased by 3.6% for the July to September period after the snack wrap officially returned to the U.S. menus and sales slightly outperformed the 3.5% forecast. The data company Placer AI also reported that traffic to McDonald's was 15% higher than average on the day snack wraps officially returned to the menu. The snack wrap was first introduced in 2004 and later discontinued to the U.S. in 2016. Well, here are the top baby names for 2025. Baby Center is out with its list of the most popular baby names for 2025. And once again, Noah and Olivia are at the top of the list. Just behind is Liam and Oliver for boys and Amelia and Sophie for girls. New additions to the top 10 include Eliana and Aurora for girls, knocking off Ava and Luna, while Luca joins the boys list, replacing Leo. Bishop Francis Calibet of the St. Thomas Chaldean Eparchy in the east of the United States was present at a meeting on October 27th at the Vatican, where Pope Leo XIV met with His Holiness Mar Awad III and Catholic Patriarch for the Church of the East. The meeting coincided with the 30th anniversary of the 1994 Common Christological Declaration signed by Pope John Paul II and Mardinha the 15th, a landmark document that resolved centuries-old disputes over the nature of Christ and opened a path to sacramental recognition between the two churches. In his address, Pope Leo emphasized that the presence of the Patriarch and the Commission bear witness to the fact that fraternal encounter and theological dialogue are mutually constituted elements on the path toward unity. 14 minutes past the hour here on Catholic Connection. Vanessa Dehagarmo filling in for Teresa Tamio. We'll be back with Father Mitch Pacwa. Well, as we all pretty much know by now, the city of New York elected a Democratic Socialist, Zohan Mamdani, as the new mayor of New York City. And as I'm reading a little bit here on the Catholic News Agency, where I get most of my news from, Catholic sources, Mayor-elect Zohan Mamdani, a Democratic Socialist who promotes gender ideology and abortion access, won the bid for mayor of New York City on November 4th. Defeating his opponents, former Governor Andrew Cuomo and talk show host Curtis Sliwa. What does this mean to our country and to us as Catholics? And to talk about, with us about that in our cultural connections section is Father Mitch Pacwa. Father Mitch, how are you today?
Fine.
So this is concerning. So what should we take from this? How should we be looking at this election from a Catholic perspective and as a country, Father Mitch?
Yeah, a couple of things. We talk about this in terms of a socialist thing. He doesn't seem to hold some of the standard Marxist ideologies of atheism. As far as I know, he's a Muslim believer, and so and not an atheist, but he does hold to a socialist point of view. And what this means is that we have to approach the problem with the right tools. And I think that these are economic analysis that's very important to have so that we can deal with this. Because the problem that occurs is, though he is a Muslim practicing his faith, apparently, he will attract a number of socialists who have either disregard or actual repugnance for religion. They will join him because they are focused not on his Islamic ideas, of course, but on his economic policies. And secondly, like all socialism, it will become more oppressive, and this is why.
Mm-hmm.
In a socialist economy, like a communist, as a matter of fact, I strongly recommend that everybody listening get hold of a book on economics that's pretty understandable. I mean, it's not super technical. This is meant for a bigger audience than just economists. It's by Friedrich Hayek, Hayak. The book is called The Road to Serfdom. And I strongly urge that, along with another economist, an American named Thomas Sowell. And I would recommend his book, Basic Economics. There's a fifth edition that deals with a lot of recent situations in the economy that people will remember. It's not about older time. Hayek wrote during and after World War II, and he pointed out that whether it was Hitler's socialism or Stalin's communism, the same thing was occurring. Too few people made decisions for too many other people. In other words, in a socialist economy, the people in the government make decisions about the economy because it sounds more efficient. That's the attraction. It sounds like a way to make sure that everybody has what they need and that the economy cannot be trusted to adjust by itself. Therefore, people in the government will have to work to make an economy that is equal for everybody, and everybody has enough. The problem with that theory sounds attractive. And I think that is what folks in New York found attractive, is this will be easier to live here. We want rent freezes and we want free transportation and cheaper groceries, because living in New York is extraordinarily expensive in those areas of life. So he promises three basic needs: food, housing, transportation. And the problem will be this. When one person or a small group of people makes those decisions, it can't account for all the factors. For instance, when you have rent freezes, it becomes a bad investment to own apartment buildings. The people who own the apartment buildings can't make money. Their costs continue to go up with inflation, when there is inflation, and the price they can charge for an apartment is controlled by the government. So that's why they call it rent controls. But basically, they're freezing the rate for rent. At the point that it becomes economically unfeasible to to make a living off of owning an apartment building, it becomes more expedient to arrange a fire or some other catastrophe that destroys the building, and then you can sell it for commercial purposes, which you can't do when there are government controls on the rent. And what happened in this occurred back in the 70s and I think into the 80s in New York, in large areas where there was rent control, buildings just kept burning. Father Grischel was living in South Bronx. He said, "I can stand on a street corner, and as far as I can look in any direction, all the houses were empty except for squatters, because they all had been set on fire and destroyed." This happens. Now, that's terrible. Who would do it? If you cannot make money off of your owning your building, you will find a way to make your property worthwhile. Yeah. And now that's just one issue. And of course, I'm making it very simple. But you do that with food. For instance, he wants to start
Government grocery stores, which takes away competition from existing stores.
Exactly. But here's the thing. How will he be able to assure that he can have lower prices and, dealing with the distributors to those stores? He still has to get groceries from somewhere.
Yeah, distributors.
Will he be sensitive to the desires and needs of the customers? In some neighborhoods, people want Hispanic food in New York City, but not just Hispanic food in general. They want Caribbean style food.
Yeah.
In other places, it'll be Italian and so on.
Yeah. Yeah.
That
we have to take a break, Father Mitch. Let's take a break and we'll continue this conversation when we come back. Father Mitch Pacwa here with us. Cultural, we're looking at the culture from a Catholic perspective. Don't go away. Continuing our conversation, talk about the culture with Father Mitch Pacwa, as Teresa always does here on a Thursday. We're talking about the recent election of a socialist, now socialist mayor in the city of New York. And Father Mitch, you were talking about grocery stores, for example. He wants a government-run grocery store. I grew up in the grocery business. That's been my family business. The profit margins are very small. It's a very complex business. It's not as simple as people think to run it. You make a really good point. You're dealing with distributors and manufacturers, and setting those price points are not easy, and it's not easy. And then when you have a government controlling prices of goods, you basically destroy competition and hurts the economy. So these are things that I don't think the average person understands.
Father Mitch. Yes, this is exactly why we have to pay close attention to this, because when you have a small profit margin, you have to sell large volume. It's the only way you make a profit.
Yeah.
And you sell at large volume when you're dealing with the desires of your customers. And when individuals in the state make these decisions about, and we're just mentioning groceries, think of all the super complicated issues, such as with transportation. To get the groceries to the store costs money. That's one reason there's a small profit margin. Mm-hmm. There are all kinds of things going on at once. And the economy is a living organism. It's constantly adapting to its environment. So things that used to be really popular back when I was a kid, people barely touched with a 10-foot pole. You know, used to get all kinds of casseroles made with Campbell's soup. That was such a staple back in the 50s. I don't think people make that much anymore.
Yeah.
I haven't had one of those in years. And I don't particularly miss them. Food changes. And again, we're just talking about one industry. And I would encourage people, if you don't read Hayek, read Sowell and Thomas Sowell. These guys understand the economy. And Hayek, with his Road to Serfdom, was in Austria. He got to England after the annexation of Austria to the Nazi Germany. And he wrote about how this is why the economy is failing. And so it's not about, ooh, the communists are going to put us in prison. I don't know that Mamdani will do that. I have no idea. Some of his associates look a little rough. He, on the other hand, is apparently sweet and smiling all the time. But that doesn't mean he can run a grocery store, yet alone a chain of grocery stores.
Yeah.
See,
yeah.
That's going to be the issue. What experience will his people have? Will they actually be able to get these stores going? That's the other thing, too. We are dealing with politicians who frequently say a lot of things and won't, or can't get them done.
Yeah. Yeah. There was the game plan.
Yeah.
I want to switch gears a little bit, Father Mitch, and just touch upon a summit I attended yesterday, which I'm going to be talking a little bit in my coach's commentary in EWTN Radio Extra. And it was a secular summit, but it was a correlation between mental illness and the drug problems in our country, primarily marijuana use. And It was, you know, the effects on teens. And what I took away from that summit, there was wonderful experts explaining the stats and the data and the research, and there's a direct correlation between mental illness, schizophrenia, bipolar, when kids are smoking marijuana before their brain fully develops.
Yeah.
But really what I took from that summit was the underlining Christian beliefs, even though it wasn't overtly shared. One young student asked at the Wayne County Community College what she can do when she encounters her, you know, other youth who are doing drugs, smoking marijuana. And one response from a doctor said, tell them you love them first. Yeah. Another guy said, share God with them. I was surprised. I really was surprised. Yeah. And I was pleasantly surprised. Can you kind of speak to that from a faith perspective? Our kids are bombarded in this culture with such anti-Christian beliefs, one, and then with the access of marijuana and not realizing the dangers of it on our mental health, among other things.
Yeah, mental and physical health. There are a number of there are lots of studies showing that there are also physical components. It's remarkable to me how many people are recommending smoking this stuff when they don't want people to smoke tobacco. Now, it doesn't have the tar that is found in tobacco. However, you're filling your lungs full of smoke. It's meant to be filled with oxygen and air, with air with all the components, not just oxygen. And so this is something that I think in terms of the psychological and spiritual elements, people are experiencing a lot of depression anyway. Their families are frequently not intact. They're not arguing with their parents. Their parents may not even be there, or may not one or other or both parents may not ever have been there. There is a strong sense of rejection and feeling at ease, feeling a certain amount of peace with oneself when your father never wanted to meet you. It's a horrible thing for a lot of people, but no matter what you say, this is how a lot of young people go through life. They feel like that their father never wanted to meet them and had no care about them.
That they brought that up too, Father Mitch, the fatherless homes in America contributing to this decline of families and these problems teenagers are having.
Right. It's much better for teenagers to be angry at a parent who sets limits for them than to be depressed because he never loved them. And again, it's not only dads. I also know of plenty of families where the mom has abandoned them too because she's using drugs.
Yeah.
This is a serious reality. And so that is a wound, that what they call a parent wound psychologically, that this wound is deep and is precisely here where someone who loves you more than your parents ever could, even if they had been there, is what's needed. The love of God the Father. You have some ideologues who say, I can't deal with God the Father because I have such a father wound. No, that's precisely what you need to heal it. A father who does love you infinitely and eternally.
Amen.
That's the way to go.
Amen. Father Mitch Pacwa, thank you. Always a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you very much. Good talking to you.
God bless you. Father Mitch Pacwa, Cultural Connections. When we come back, Joan Lewis, Joan's Rome, will be with us. Is with us here on Catholic Connection, as she is every week with Teresa Tomeo. So much to talk with her about. And Joan, I want to start with a story that I read in the news. Pope Leo met with the Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas. Tell us about that.
A fascinating meeting, and it's the first time that they've met in person, but they had spoken on the phone before today's meeting. So the conversation, obviously, the Pope talked about the urgent need to provide assistance to the civilian population in Gaza, and obviously also the urgent need to end the conflict by pursuing a two-state solution. And I mean, the Vatican for decades, I know since I started working there long before that in 1990, the Vatican has always promoted a two-state solution, so Palestine and Israel. But to me, what was one of the fascinating things about Mahmoud's visit today, and, you know, we're only given a short version of their of the talk, private talks they had. By the way, Mahmoud Abbas did not meet with the Secretary of State, Cardinal Parolin, or with the number two, Paul Gallagher, Archbishop Paul Gallagher, because they are both out of town. So Mahmoud Abbas met only with Pope Francis. And I shouldn't have used the word only, but in other words, he did not meet with other officials. But the first thing he did, though, arriving in Rome yesterday afternoon, he went to visit St. Mary Major. He wanted to pay his respects to the tomb of Pope Francis, and he told the journalists who were there, he said, "I came to see Pope Francis because I cannot forget what he did for Palestine and for the Palestinian people, and I can't forget that he recognized Palestine without anyone having to ask him to do so." So, absolutely fascinating. Now, it wasn't a long meeting. It was only about 15 minutes, and he was accompanied by an Egyptian Franciscan friar, Ibrahim Faitas. His name, if it seems familiar to you or our listeners, he was a former vicar of the Custody of the Holy Land. And a Custody of the Holy Land, if we ever wanted to talk about that, we could occupy several hours of several days.
Wow.
Such a fact. Well, the whole Middle East. The whole Holy Land. A lot of people forget, Vanessa, that the Holy Land, Cyprus is part of the Holy Land.
Yeah.
Jordan is part of the Holy Land. So
yeah.
A lot of things we don't know. But anyway, no, Abbas, when he was at the tomb of Pope Francis, he did place a bouquet of flowers on the tomb. And, of course, the tomb only has the name, as we know, Franciscus on it. So I have yet to be there. Someday I certainly will go and pray, you know, for the man whose pontificate I covered for his 12 years. So I had so much writing and researching. I didn't go out this morning. I knew Mahmoud Abbas was coming, one of the individuals the Pope was going to meet today. But I was kind of curious as to the to see about the if there was any traffic restrictions, because often when there's a head of state who could it's very, very important. It could be Russia, China, U.S., or a head of state also important like Mahmoud Abbas, and he could be maybe more controversial. But I didn't know if there were any special provisions for, you know, St. Peter's Square being closed when his car would be coming in. So that I didn't see and didn't read anything about it, but an interesting visit. The picture of the two of them, the Holy Father was smiling, and he's a good listener, Vanessa. I think that's what you and I have.
That makes a great leader.
Yes. It does indeed. Mm-hmm. And anybody who's ever worked with this Pope for 5 days or 5 years has stressed the fact that probably his biggest talent is listening. So I am sure that their conversation was just fascinating. And as far as I know, Mahmoud Abbas speaks good English. So
yeah,
had to be an interesting meeting. I would like to have been a fly on the wall.
Yeah, I want to switch gears just a little bit with you here, Joan. And the Vatican, this is from the National Catholic Register. It's been reported in other places. Vatican nixes use of co-redemptrix as title for Mary. Tell us about this. And people are very confused by this. I've seen a lot of discussion threads on this.
Well, I don't. If people actually, Vanessa, read the document, they will not be confused.
Okay.
And it's very clear. I read the whole document. I knew there were going to be people who might disagree because they really love a title that you know, the Vatican now says we can't use. But so the document came out on Tuesday. It's called Mater Populi Fidelis. In English, that's Mother of the Faithful People. And it's a doctrinal note on, quote, some Marian titles regarding Mary's cooperation in the work of salvation. So it's already fascinating. The word cooperation can be used, cooperation in the work of salvation. So here's the important paragraph. It says the doctrinal text analyzes a number of Marian titles, encouraging the adoption of some of those appellations and warning against the use of others. So here's the good titles: Mother of Believers, Spiritual Mother, Mother of the Faithful. Now, these are all approved. What has not been approved is co-redemptrix, or co-redeemer, if you will. They call this inappropriate and problematic. And then, so that just can't be used, period. Then there's a question with the title of mediatrix, mediator, if you will. This is considered unacceptable when it takes on a meaning that excludes Jesus Christ. However, it can be used appropriately as long as it is, expresses an inclusive and participatory mediation that glorifies the power of Christ. So the titles, Mother of Grace and Mediatrix of All Graces, are considered acceptable when used in a very precise sense. But the document warns of particularly broad explanations of the meaning of the terms, because there are people of all faiths and no faith, I suppose, that have their own agenda, and they're going to put their own reading into it. So the Vatican document is trying to be very clear about what can be used and what cannot be used. And the funny thing is, as I read the document and as I finished reading it, Vanessa, one thing came to mind. It's called the Litany of the Blessed Virgin Mary, the Litany of Loreto, right?
Yeah.
There are 54 titles in that litany that can be used for Mary.
Yeah.
Now, there's titles referring to motherhood. Oh, and the document from the Dicastery for the Doctrine of the Faith, they talk at length and beautifully about the motherhood of Mary. So we have Holy Mother of God.
We have beautiful titles.
Mother of Mercy.
Yeah.
Mother of Hope.
Mm-hmm.
We have virgin titles: Virgin Most Prudent, Virgin Most Venerable, Most Powerful. We have queen titles: Queen of Angels, Queen of Martyrs, Queen of All Saints. I mean, I've only given you nine of those titles. And when we say the Hail Mary, we're always saying, even if we say it by rote, we are always saying, Holy Mary, Mother of God.
Yeah.
I mean, they're the Mother of God. What more could you even want than that? And so now we have Spiritual Mother. That's okay. Mother of the Faithful. That's perfect. These are all approved. So just to go to one word which is inappropriate and another word which we have to be careful about, just to look at two titles and start to argue over them. I mean, I don't even want to tell you what I saw on Facebook.
Oh, I know. I did too. I think your point is well taken. If people just actually read the document and not just the headline and understood it, you wouldn't be probably arguing on social media. And that's what happens all the time. People don't read the document. They just read a headline and think they could chime in on a conversation.
Vanessa, I mean, you and I are in the business. It's our job to read completely, you know, what comes out from the Vatican.
Sure.
Sometimes we have to get up earlier in the morning or go to bed later at night. But it is our job to know these things. I know it's not the job of the people in the pew who have full-time work and have families, and they don't have the time to dedicate to a full analysis, you know, of a papal document.
Yeah.
But this is where we come in. This is where the media's job has to be, to give that truthful summary of an analytical document. We can't have an agenda. My agenda, I do have one. It's called the truth.
Yeah, that should be all of our agendas in the media.
Yes, exactly.
Unfortunately, we have become from journalists to advocates, unfortunately.
And Vanessa, one thing I'm always telling people, I'm doing it on the air and in my blog, and sometimes I'll answer something that's really off base on Facebook. If you want to know what the Holy Father, in his case, or even in the case of a congregation in the Vatican, if you want to know what the Holy Father actually said on a certain matter on a certain day, all you have to do is go to Vatican.va. It is right there.
Yeah.
And there's also, you know, VaticanNews.va.
Yeah. I go to that all the time. I read Vatican News daily almost.
Yeah. Two sources.
Yeah.
You've got it.
Joan,
yeah.
I want to switch gears in just the last 2 minutes with you and talk about Cardinal Newman, now Doctor of the Church.
Oh, that was such an absolutely wonderful event on the weekend, Saturday, of course, November 1st, All Saints Day, I mean. And the interesting thing is, one of the people that I was going to interview who was going to be in Rome for last week's Jubilee of Education, we had been corresponding, and she wrote me days before the event began. She says, Joan, guess what? There's been such great response at the Vatican to the Jubilee of Education that the Jubilee Mass that was going to be in St. Peter's Basilica was moved to the square. And anybody who saw the Mass on TV on Saturday, they saw there were probably 15 to 20,000 people. So it was during that Mass that the Pope named, it was the Solemnity of All Saints and the Jubilee of Education. And the Holy Father proclaimed St. John Henry Newman as the 38th doctor of the church. Now, so there's 38 doctors, 34 are men, 4 are women. And the Pope praised him highly, calling him a master of faith and reason. Mm. And he urged educators, the Pope did, to form people, quote, who may shine like stars in their full dignity. And he asked the educators to make schools gateways to a civilization of dialogue and love. And by the way, the same day, November 1st, Pope Leo named St. Newman co-patron of the church's educational mission together with Thomas Aquinas.
Yes.
And what I love, it was Leo the 14th's predecessor, Leo the 13th, who made Newman a cardinal in 1879.
Yeah.
And he made Thomas Aquinas patron of Catholic education just a year later. So now we have a co-patron along with Aquinas. But it was a very, very jubilant day.
Amen. So. Joan Lewis, always a pleasure talking with you. Joan's Rome, thanks for being with us here on Catholic Connection.
God bless you. Have a great day.
God bless you. We're going to head into, we're going to wrap up actually this hour and talk about who's coming up on EW10 Radio Extra. Don't go away. To Father Mitch Paquin, Joan Lewis, as always, joining us here on Catholic Connection. Vanessa Denha-Garmo filling in for Teresa Tamio. I want to just give you an update on the world over with Raymond Arroyo, one of my favorite things to watch on EWTN. Sebastian Lay, son of the incarcerated Hong Kong businessman and democracy advocate Jimmy Lay, discusses the latest efforts by President Trump and his administration on behalf of his father. Representative Chris Smith, chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Africa Subcommittee on the redesignation of Nigeria as a country of particular concern regarding the persecution of Christians occurring there. And Most Reverend Athanasius Schneider, Auxiliary Bishop of Astana, cast the stand on his new book, No Greater Love, The True Meaning of Martyrdom. The World Over with Raymond tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on EWTN TV and radio. And get news from The World Over in your email inbox every week. Visit EWTN.com and click on subscribe. We are going to head into the EWTN Radio Extra. I'll have my coach's commentary with some epiphany insights on a summit I attended yesterday, and I'll share that with you from a Catholic perspective. And Cy Kellett will be with us, host of Catholic Answers, about his new book, How to Talk About Jesus with Anyone, which we are all charged to do, by the way, brothers and sisters. We're all called to evangelize the faith. You know, we're all called, you know, exercise and eat healthy. We should be doing that, but we all need to know how to share Jesus with the world. So we'll talk with Cy Kellett about that. Going into EWTN Radio Extra, join us there.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
Good morning. It's Vanessa Denha-Garmo filling in for Teresa Tomeo here on EWTN Radio Extra. I'm the host of Epiphany on the EWTN affiliate in Ann Arbor, Ave Maria Radio. And I'm a Catholic leadership coach, strengths coach, and so happy to be with all of you here today. How to talk about Jesus with anyone. So it's the one thing we all should be doing, or probably more of. Is it exercising, eating right, calling mom more? Well, probably yes to all of those things. But really, what we all need to be doing better is spreading the good news about Jesus Christ and his salvation. This is not optional. It's an explicit command from the Lord himself. So why do we work so hard to be good Catholics in so many ways by going to church, obeying the commandments, preserving the prayer, participating in the sacraments, but we make excuses about how to talk to Jesus with people? We will be talking about how to talk about Jesus with anyone. Steve Dawson, St. Paul Street Evangelization, teams up with Cy Kellett, Catholic Answers Live, to help you and me replace those excuses with a tested plan for going from timid and hesitant to confident and zealous in our daily duty to save souls. That is what we're charged to do, brothers and sisters. So we'll talk about that with our guest coming up, Cy Kellett, with us here today on Catholic Connection. And these are wonderful tools for all of us to go out and evangelize the faith. I think about this all the time, and I pray about it, especially when certain conversations come up naturally with friends and family who are at different places in their faith journey. And all of us are at different places. But I think about myself, what would Jesus say at this moment? It's the reason I started these one-minute Epiphany Insights or Christ-Centered Communication messages that are heard in Catholic radio in the country, because I really wanted to think about what would Jesus say at this moment. With this situation. And I started writing these in 2012, and because I found myself stumped. And so I'm really excited to talk about this book. I'm also going to share a coach's commentary today. I talked a little bit about, alluded to this in my conversation with Father Mitch Pacwa last hour on Catholic Connection, but I went to a Detroit Urban Summit that focused on drugs and mental illness among teens, youth. And there were several kids from various high schools in Southeast Michigan, in Wayne County, in fact. And this took place at the biggest community college in the state of Michigan, one of the biggest and most successful in the country. And that's Wayne County Community College, led by Dr. Curtis Ivory, who's a very impressive leader. And I'll talk about that. But what really struck me was what I took away from the conference. I took many wonderful nuggets away, but one thing that really struck me as a Catholic, I started to look at the conversations from a Christian Catholic perspective. And one of the things they really talked about were fatherless families, the lack of love and security children have today, the lack of friendship and fellowship, which is all central to our Christian faith, which is all really core to our Christian faith, really love. God is love. And these children need to feel loved, and they join gangs and they deal drugs and they get involved in drugs because they want a sense of belonging. And that's what a lot of the stats show. And it's really sad because so many kids in urban areas, you know, more than 50% are in fatherless families. And so a lot of the young men think their only path to life is either, you know, incarceration or dying young. And so I'm going to have a coach's commentary on what we can do as adults in terms of talking to our children. And this wasn't just intended for urban kids. The statistics are alarming, but this applies to all of us. It is approaching 5 minutes past the hour here on Catholic Connection. I'm Vanessa Dunham filling in for Teresa Tomeo, and now it's time for the news on EWTN. We're going to start that newscast with a weather update from Tammy Trillo.
In the Northeast, temperatures will stay in the low 50s with some lingering lake effect showers across upstate New York and northern Pennsylvania, with partly sunny skies elsewhere. A cool, crisp day across the mid-Atlantic with temperatures near 60 from Washington, D.C. up through Philadelphia. In the southeast, sunny skies from Atlanta to Orlando with temperatures in the mid-70s and low humidity. Along the Gulf Coast, a few passing clouds but no major rainmakers. Spotty showers linger in the deep south from coastal Texas through southern Louisiana, otherwise warm and humid with temperatures around 80. A powerful cold front has settled into the Midwest with temperatures only in the 40s and wind chills dipping into the 30s. The northern plains stay cold under clear skies with temperatures in the 40s, while the southern plains, including Oklahoma and Texas, warm up into the 70s. Warm, dry, and sunny across the southwest with temperatures in the mid to upper 80s for Phoenix and Las Vegas. Checking California, sunshine statewide with temperatures in the upper 60s along the coast and in the mid 70s inland. And in the Pacific Northwest, steady showers are expected from Seattle to Portland with highs in the upper 50s. That's your national forecast. I'm Tammy Trujillo.
And Vatican City Pope Leo met Thursday with Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas, marking their first in-person meeting. The two leaders discussed what the Vatican called the urgent need to end the conflict in Gaza and ensure humanitarian aid reaches civilians. This from Vatican News. The Holy See Press Office described the meeting as cordial, with both leaders reaffirming support for a two-state solution and peace in the region. President Abbas also visited the tomb of Pope Francis at the Basilica of St. Mary Major, laying flowers and honoring the late pontiff's recognition of Palestine. The visit coincides with the 10th anniversary of the comprehensive agreement between the Holy See and the State of Palestine, an accord affirming Palestinian self-determination and the shared spiritual significance of Jerusalem. There is celebration and condemnation around the world following Zohan Mamdani's election as mayor of New York City. Rory O'Neill has more.
Mamdani, the democratic socialist Muslim of Indian descent who was born in Uganda and a New Yorker since he was seven, an American citizen in 2018, Mamdani is now mayor-elect of its largest city. London Mayor Sadiq Khan called the election a win for hope, as both men have faced attacks because of their religion. In Israel, the national security minister said Mamdani's election would, quote, be remembered as the moment when anti-Semitism overcame common sense. I'm Rory O'Neill.
Two New Jersey men are facing charges in connection to an alleged terror plot. Natalie Migliori has more.
Acting U.S. Attorney for New Jersey Alina Haba says the pair were part of the same online communication group as the suspects arrested in connection to the alleged ISIS-inspired plot in Michigan, using the platform to discuss their own separate plots. Haba says the 19 and 20-year-old suspects plan to travel to Syria to pledge themselves to ISIS. One of the suspects is charged with conspiring to provide material support to a terrorist organization, while the other is charged with transmitting violent anti-Semitic threats on the internet. I'm Natalie Migliori, NBC News Radio.
Some Senate Republicans say they're close to reaching a deal to reopen the government, Mark Mayfield reports.
The shutdown has been going on for 37 days and is the longest in history. Senate Majority Leader John Thune said yesterday that a mini funding package that could get bipartisan support is nearing completion. He met with Democratic negotiators Tuesday night in an effort to find a solution. Some lawmakers are now hopeful a deal can be reached and approved by Congress next week, but that depends on how quickly negotiators can get others on board. I'm Mark Mayfield.
And the latest with the tech update, here's more from Mark Mayfield.
Instagram is being ordered to stop using PG-13 to describe its new teen accounts. Matt Mattinson explains.
The Motion Picture Association reportedly sent a cease and desist letter to Instagram's parent company Meta over the use of the rating. It said the claims the new setting is guided by the PG-13 rating are literally false and highly misleading. The MPA said it can't be aligned with its rating system because it doesn't use the same curated process and instead heavily relies on artificial intelligence. It argued that any dissatisfaction with the Instagram setting would cause the public to question the integrity of the MPA's rating system.
Perplexity is getting a warning from Amazon about its AI-powered shopping assistant, Comet. Amazon says Comet is not identifying itself as an agent when it's shopping on Amazon. Perplexity argues that Amazon is trying to stifle innovation. And Anthropic reportedly expects to see $70 billion in revenue by 2028. The AI giant recently inked deals with Microsoft and Salesforce. Tech Report, I'm Mark Mayfield.
Tesla's annual shareholder meeting is today, and there's a major vote coming that could either make Elon Musk the world's first trillionaire or see him part ways with the electric vehicle maker. Musk's $1 trillion performance-based comprehension package is at stake, as well as his continuing control of the company. The tech billionaire has hinted that he might leave Tesla if his pay deal is blocked. Ahead of today's critical vote, Norway's sovereign wealth fund, a major Tesla investor, announced it would vote no. Both the Powerball and the Mega Millions jackpot are sky high. Mark Mayfield has more.
There was no grand prize winner in Wednesday night's Powerball drawing, so that jumps to $467 million with a cash option of nearly $221 million. And then there's Mega Millions with an estimated $843 million up for grabs in the next drawing on Friday. I'm Mark Mayfield.
In Peoria, Illinois, the diocese has officially broken ground on a new cultural center honoring Archbishop Fulton J. Sheen. The historic Spalding Institute will be transformed into the Fulton J. Sheen Experience, expanding the current museum into a $9 to $11 million facility funded entirely by private donations. The new center will feature interactive exhibits, personal artifacts, and extensive archives of Sheen's radio and television work. Bishop Louis Tilka says the project will deepen public understanding of Sheen's legacy and draw thousands more visitors to Peoria. The center is expected to welcome up to 15,000 visitors annually, celebrating the life of a man who inspired millions to live boldly for Christ. McDonald's is seeing a boost in sales after bringing back some of its fan favorite items. Same store sales reportedly increased by 3.6% for July to September period after the snack wrap officially returned to the U.S. menus. Sales slightly outperformed the 3.5% forecast. The data company Placer AI also reported that traffic to McDonald's was 15% higher than average on the day snack wraps officially returned to the menu. The snack wraps was first introduced in 2004 and later discontinued in the U.S. in 2016. Well, here are the top baby names for 2025. Baby Center is out with a list of the most popular baby names for 2025. And once again, Noah, Olivia are at the top of the list. Just behind is Liam and Oliver for boys and Amelia and Sophie for girls. New additions to the top 10 include Eliana and Aurora for girls, knocking off Ava and Luna, while Luca joins the boy list, replacing Leo. Pope Bishop Francis Calabut at St. Thomas Chaldean Eparchy in the east of the U.S. was present at the meeting October 27th at the Vatican, where Pope Leo XIV met with His Holiness Mar Awa III and Catholic Patriarch of the Church of the East. The meeting coincided with the 30th anniversary of the 1994 Common Christological Declaration signed by Pope John Paul II and Martinicha XV, a landmark document that resolved centuries-old dispute over the nature of Christ and opened a path to sacramental recognition between the two churches. In his address, Pope Leo emphasized that the presence of the Patriarch and the Commission bear witness to the fact that fraternal encounter and theological dialogue are mutually constitutive elements on the path toward unity. We are approaching 14 minutes past the hour here on Catholic Connection. I'm Vanessa Denha-Garmo, filling in for Teresa Tamio, who has been on site in Italy filming scenes for her next series on EWTN to be broadcast next year during the anniversary of the death of St. Francis of Assisi. I'm very excited about this new series, and she has been sharing clips, videos, and pictures on her Facebook, and I've been following along. I can't wait to see that EWTN new series next year in 2026. Stay with us, everyone. We're going to head into the next segment, my coach's commentary with some epiphany insights on a summit I attended yesterday. Stay with us, everyone. So yesterday, here in Michigan, I attended a Detroit Urban Summit at the largest community college in the state of Michigan, Wayne County Community College, a college that 30 years ago was actually about to go under. And led by Curtis Ivory, Dr. Curtis Ivory. He turned that college around and has now become the biggest community college in the state of Michigan and one of the biggest in the country. And one of the things that he does outside the traditional educational and academics at the college is he brings in various world-renowned speakers, nationally known speakers, to talk about cultural issues that we're facing. And this was on the direct effect of marijuana and drugs, alcohol on teens and mental illness and the rise of depression and anxiety and what's going on in the world today. Several people who attended, there were probably 400 or 500 people at this summit yesterday, and several of them were students from various high schools in the Wayne County area here in Michigan. And what I took away from this were many important nuggets, but from a Catholic perspective, what was central to me and the solutions they were talking about were faith, family, and fellowship. That was pretty much my summation, and I took a lot away from this, but I'm reflecting on the powerful experience and one that stirred my soul and really sharpened my focus. I had the, you know, I attended this Detroit Urban Summit at Wayne County Community College hosted by Dr. Curtis Ivory. And the theme on youth and mental health, substance abuse and rebuilding communities and lives. But what really unfolded was far more than a symposium and a one-day takeaway. It was really a movement. And let me just start here. The mind has power. And as Christian Catholics, we know that power is not random. It's really divine. It's the Lord. That inner voice we hear, the Holy Spirit guiding us, convicting us, encouraging us. God doesn't speak in shame and fear. He speaks in truth and love and purpose. Negative thoughts are not from God because God wants good things for us. He wants us to become the best version of ourselves, to be who He created us to be. And that message echoed through every corner of the summit for me. There was a lot of talk about our self-talk. And from, you know, Reverend Wendell Anthony stirring up a poem, I Ain't Crazy, to Dr. Nikolai Vitti's vision for Detroit Public Schools, it was a day of truth-telling. We heard about the rise in youth suicide, the easy access to edibles and marijuana, the mental health crisis in our schools. But we also heard about solutions. And they were talking about what can we do, but the solutions were guidance, you know, really more about guidance counselors and social workers and more career tech opportunities and giving kids an opportunity. And one of the things that really struck me is when a student at the college asked the question, what are some of the things that I could say to youth who are struggling with substance abuse? And one man, a doctor, replied back. He said, tell them that they are loved. And it really struck a chord with me because that is truly a Christian Catholic foundation and relationships. God is love. And it's sharing God and the way they were created in God's image. And some talked about God in the conversation, even though this was not a Christian or Catholic summit. But that was so foundational for me. They offer dual enrollment with high school students at the community college, enabling these kids to start thinking about their careers young, giving them hope, knowing that they have a purpose, a vision, where every child has a champion. That's what Dr. Ivory talked about. His son actually talked about his dad's dedication to believe that every child has a champion. As Christians, we have to champion for our children from a Christ perspective, sharing Jesus with them. And we're going to be talking about sharing Jesus with our next guest. Speaking of champions, Dr. Curtis Ivory, 30 years ago, they said Wayne County Community College would not survive. They had 15 presidents in 30 years. They talked about this in our capital, but he didn't just hold the line. He built a true legacy. Wayne County Community College spans 500 square miles, serves students speaking 140 languages from 7 nations, and they stand as a national model for fiscal responsibility. It's the largest urban and suburban college in Michigan and one of the largest in the nation. And one of the things that Dr. Ivory talked about, and it was advice he got from his mentor, is finding one thing you're passionate about and stay the course. We have to help our children realize they're made in the likeness and image of God. They have been given God-given talents. As St. Catherine of Siena said, be who God intended you to be, or set the world on fire. Find your passion, you'll find your purpose. And that comes from your natural talents and your charisms. you know, Dr. Ivory talked about his passion was to make life better today than it was yesterday for children. Him and his son co-authored a book on Black fatherhood. Education is a lifeline for people who otherwise might not have made it. And then they had a keynote speaker, Chakra Sengor from Detroit. The keynote speaker, his story, unforgettable, from a 14-year-old drug dealer to a best-selling author. He wrote 3 books while serving a life sentence in prison. He ended up serving 20 years. And he really talked about power of the mind and the grace of transformation. He spent 7 of those 19 years in prison in solitary confinement and wrote 3 books in that time period. He said the most important narrative is the one we construct in our own mind. And he's right. Because freedom doesn't begin when the doors open. It begins when we reclaim our own thoughts, centering them on Christ. Chakra reminded us that we all live in hidden prisons. And I've written about this and co-wrote about this in the book Freedom Behind Bars with Tom Naimi, who also served about almost 20 years in prison. Because we are in our own prisons. We're in our prisons of trauma, our shame, our fear, our ego. I've heard people use the acronym ego as edging God out. When we think more of ourselves and less of God, that's where our ego comes into play. But we also hold the key. How to be free is more than a title. It's a roadmap. So Chakra, he imagined that North Star. Now, he wasn't coming at this from a Catholic or Christian perspective, but I did. I saw Christ in this conversation. You know, they talked about fatherless families and gangs and the need for family reunification. There are no throwaway people was a big message yesterday. No, there aren't. And we know this as Catholics from inception to natural death. That includes the most vulnerable, children in the womb. And one of the things that really struck me is when the former police chief of Detroit use the analogy that friends are like a food group. You need the ones who tell you the truth. That's wisdom. Because when you're around, you become, when you're around good people, like eating good fruits and vegetables, you become better. Who are you filling? What are you filling your mind with? Who are you filling your time with? It's those friends that will help you lead you in the right direction. One of the things that I've been praying for many years, one of the prayers I prayed for many years is, God, bring the people in my life who will lead me in the direction you want me to go. And that's what I want for my own daughter. Children need to surround themselves with good friends, healthy friends, loyal friends who are on a path to success centered on Christ. That's why good Catholic schools are so important, the ones from the Newman Guide. You want your children to be around people like this. There was even a moment where kids shook a bottle. They did this exercise. I loved it. I might do this with some clients in my coaching practice. They all had a pop bottle. And they shook it every time the police chief said something that stressed them out. Like, I have a lot of homework. I have a test coming up. I just got in a fight with my mom. My friends dumped me. I saw something on social media that upset me. And they kept shaking the bottle and shaking the bottle. Now, the question is, now open that pop bottle. You know what's going to happen. I know what's going to happen. It's going to explode. The pressure built up. And then you release it on other people. And that's what happens. And we don't want to do that. We want to slowly release that pressure. What do? We meditate. We pray. We go to Jesus. You know, and in order to truly love yourself, you have to know the Creator who loves you and see your life through His eyes. We are made in His likeness and image. So the summit wasn't just about information. It really was about transformation. And to me, it was transformation in Christ. It was a truth about, it was about truth, healing, and hope. Reminding every person in the room that they matter. You matter. I matter. So I kind of recap this in a blog on my website, epiphanycommunications.com. I also published it on Substack. You can read it there. People are asking me where my coach's commentaries are. There are Epiphany Insights on my website, epiphanycommunications.com. Don't go away. We'll be right back after the break. Excited about this new book out, How to Talk About Jesus with Anyone. because I often think about this. You know, I've been thinking about this for years. It's why I wrote my Christ-centered communication messages or Epiphany Insights. And I'm so happy that Cy Kellett is with us here, host of Catholic Answers Live, to talk about this book he co-wrote, How to Talk About Jesus with Anyone. So tell us, Cy, how this came to be. What inspired the writing of this book?
That's funny, because sometimes it's hard to answer that question. With this book, it's the easiest thing, because we had the title from our president. Chris Check is president of Catholic Answers, and he said he wanted a book about how to talk about Jesus with anyone. And so the title came first, and then we said, who's the person that knows how to answer that question? And Steve Dawson immediately came to mind, because Steve Dawson is the founder of St. Paul Street Evangelization, yeah, and an extraordinary person. And he has spent years and years on the street and in every kind of situation talking with people about Jesus. He started a whole apostolate just devoted to talking with people about Jesus and training people to talk about Jesus with others. So he was the guy. And when he said yes, he also said, I need a co-author. You know, he's busy. He said, yeah, I need somebody to write with me. And so I got to be paired up with him. So really, the book is an inspiration from our president. It's the ideas of Steve Dawson. And I kind of assisted in putting it all together. So I sat at the feet of Steve Dawson, really, and learned all this stuff as we were writing.
You know, and we'll have this at the EWTN Religious Catalog, but who published the book?
Catholic Answers Press. Yeah, that's one of our books. It comes from Catholic Answers Press.
Oh, Catholic Answers Press. Perfect. And so I love the description here. You know, it's the one thing we all should be doing but probably aren't or not enough. Is it exercising, eat right, calling mom? Well, we all should be doing all those things too. But what people don't realize, Cy, is that we're all called to evangelize the faith. We're all called to bring others to Christ. And I don't think a lot of people understand that or even know what that means.
Well, that second one is the problem, is that I think even when you say that, people clench up, like, get, yeah, like, oh, I know I'm supposed to be doing that. It's like, I know I'm supposed to be eating right. You know, I know I'm supposed to be, yeah, getting more green, yeah, vegetables, but yeah, I don't know how to do that. Or it's very unpleasant to do that. And I'll get to that later. And so I do think one of the things about practical advice, like, this is a real how-to book. It's not a why you should book, although, okay, there's a little bit of that. Uh-huh. It's a how-to book because exactly what you said, people are like, even when they hear you should be evangelizing, that's what all Christians are called to do. Well, yeah, how am I supposed to do that? You know, we get that nervous, yeah, reaction. And I think that's what the book is an answer to. Don't be nervous. Jesus didn't call you to do something miserable and horrible. He called you to do something that's actually quite pleasant when you learn how to do it.
Yeah. You know, many years ago, like I said, I was in boardrooms and I was still working in county government, and I would have these conversations and I'm like, what would Jesus say right now to these people? Yeah. I'd get stumped, right? And like, how do I approach a subject? And, you know, what are some of the things that you have found in your experience that maybe is a common denominator in turning, stumping people where they're just like, oh, I don't want to have this conversation? Is it when it comes to political issues like abortion or gender ideology or immigration? I mean, what are the ones that people just don't want to talk about from a Catholic or Christian perspective?
You know, I think all of that is in there. But I think the main difficulty is that the sharing of the person of Jesus actually makes people uncomfortable, because it kind of has gotten to be almost, it's almost like a sign of an unbalanced person, because it's been portrayed so badly in media for so long that the person who wants to talk about Jesus. So I do think there is all of that moral stuff is very difficult to raise with Jesus, with people, but Jesus is particularly difficult. Because, I mean, how many times have you seen the nutty Christian or the maniacal Christian or the weird Christian portrayed in media? And people just don't want to be that. I don't want to be that weird person. And so there's a fear of the name of Jesus almost, or just talking openly about Jesus, because we're trying to avoid being that creepy person that shows up in every Netflix movie, that creepy, you know, the creepy, weird Christian.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I do think, yeah, there is a particular problem with Jesus, and the problem is that we've been intimidated out of it by being kind of falsely educated that there's something weird about anybody who wants to talk about Jesus. There's something creepy about you if you want to do that, which is the farthest thing from the truth.
So how do we overcome that perception, that negative perception of creepiness?
Well, I think be normal is one of the things, but normalize, be normal as you, you know, be normal as a Christian. That is, you know, one of the ways that you can begin to talk with others about Jesus or to begin to be comfortable doing it is to be open about your faith so that people know what they're getting when they get you. Don't hide it. So, you know, like, it can be a real act of courage, say in the workplace, to make the sign of the cross on yourself before you eat. But if you do that, then a lot of other conversations will become easier later because people will see that they know who you are then. They know, oh, I'm dealing with a Catholic. And they maybe they have negative views of Catholics. Maybe they don't like it. But at least you've kind of set the tone of expectation that people know who you are. So somebody says, you know, oh, I gotta go away next week. You know, my mother is very, very ill. If you can say, I'm going to pray for your mom, or, you know, God bless you, I know that's hard. These are things that are unoffensive, unobtrusive. Yeah. But if you make them part of your everyday way of speaking to people, people begin to know who you are. And then you've already kind of broken the ice. It's not going to come as a shock the day that you, you know, go the next step and sort of proclaim Jesus. And proclaiming is not scary. It's not like, it doesn't mean getting a bullhorn out. As a matter of fact, when you said, I'll pray for your mom, or God bless you, that's very hard, you've already begun to proclaim the gospel. You're already doing it. So like, give yourself some credit. You're already doing it.
Yeah.
So the first thing is to live authentically and comfortably as a Christian. Don't try to hide the signs of your Christianity. And then the next steps are easier when those opportunities come up.
Yeah. One of my favorite questions to ask people, Cy, Kelly, we got to go to break soon, is how can I pray for you? Or, you know.
Oh, beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah. And, right. And one of the things that I do too is very subtly, like everybody in my circles know how Christian I am. They, my couple friends, we were just out to dinner with, they call me Sister Vanessa because it's a kind of a joke, but I give holy water. Like one of my friend's kids just went on study abroad and I sent him holy water and a St. Benedict medal with him. And about a month into it, he texts me and he goes, you know, Miss Vanessa, thank you so much. That was so kind of you. I really appreciate it. I use my holy water every day. And I showed his parents and like, oh, that was so nice of him. So there's so many different ways, Cy, we can share Jesus. And I love this book, How to Talk About Jesus with Anyone. It doesn't have to be that complicated.
No. And that I think if you have to go to a break, I have a great story.
Yeah, we're going to go to break.
About praying for people. I want to share that story with you when we come back.
Absolutely. Cy Kelly is going to share a wonderful story with us about how to pray for people. Don't go away. How to talk about Jesus with anyone. Better book to buy for a stocking stuffer this Christmas than How to Talk About Jesus with Anyone, written by Steve Dawson and Cy Kellett. Cy, who's with me here today. Cy, this is a great Christmas book gift to give to people, our friends and family this year. And before we went to break, you were going to tell us a story about praying for people. What could you share with us?
Yeah, about how that can help in evangelization. I'll tell you about what Steve Dawson said to me. And he goes, in the course of our conversations, getting ready to write the book, he said, "Do you and your wife, when you go out to dinner, do you make the sign of the cross before you eat?" And I'm all thinking, I'm super proud of myself. I'm like, "Yeah, I'm a super Catholic, Steve. You know, I'm bragging. Yes, of course I do, Steve." And Steve says, "Well, let me ask you if you could take that one step further." And I said, "Okay." He goes, "Next time you're out to eat and the waiter or waitress is there, tell them, say, we're going to pray before we eat. Is there anything we can pray for you? And so I tried this when I went out to dinner shortly after that with some friends. The young woman took our order and everything like that. And she said, is there anything else? And I said, well, we always pray before we eat, because these were Catholic friends. So we're going to pray before we eat. Is there anything we could pray for you? And she was quite touched by that. And she had a very simple thing, and I think she was nervous, but she had a very simple thing and said, well, could you pray for this? And we said, oh, and then it changed our whole relationship with her. I think she could see we were treating her as a human being, not just as the person who waits on us. Yeah. Well, I told this story at a conference with 1,000 people in the room on a Friday. And they all, at that night, they went out to dinner. It was a free night after the Friday at this conference. Everybody went out to dinner. Saturday, so many people came back to me, and they said, that thing that you told us, that Steve told you to do, we tried it at dinner last night. We just said to the waiter, or we said to the waitress, we're going to pray before we eat. Can we pray for you? And it was amazing, the stories that people had. Like, one person showed me, look, we took a picture with the waitress because she told us about her, she's not married, she's a single mom, and she wanted us to pray for her daughter, and they got to be friends with the waitress. And there was a sharing on the level of faith and on the level of God's love, and all of that happened just because they said, hey, we're going to pray before we eat, can we pray for you? Now, a lot of times people will say, no, thank you, or they're just too busy, and they'll be like, oh, no, I got nothing. That's fine, they just move on. It doesn't do any harm to anybody. But you will be amazed if you just take this one step further. You're already making the sign of the cross when you go out to dinner. If your family makes the sign of the cross when you go out to dinner, add this one step. Now you are evangelizing. Now you're talking with people about Jesus. And it's as simple as that. That's the thing. Vanessa, it's as simple as that. It's not a matter of learn to be a theologian. It's a matter of learn to share your faith, the faith that you have in you, because God loves you everywhere you go in ways that are helpful to people.
Yeah. And you're showing people that you care, right?
And, amen to that.
And that care is like, I do love you as a fellow human being, just as we're called to. God loves you just like he loves me. What a great example. I absolutely love that. We're talking about how to talk about Jesus with anyone. Steve Dawson and Cy Kellett co-wrote the book, available at the EWTN Religious Catalog, a great stocking stuffer. And we know that the enemy is not going to like this. The more, when we evangelize the faith, how do we guard against ways the devil will try to stop us?
Well, this is a very important part of the book, actually. Steve insisted that this be in there, and he's right about that, because, look, the primary tool that the devil has for the evangelist, for the person who takes seriously, my life is a mission to share Jesus with other people. That's the example the apostles gave us. Once they had received communion on Holy Thursday, once they had received the Spirit at Pentecost, their life was mission after that. And that's the example that the scripture gives us. That's the proper response to Jesus. If he's loved you and he saved you, the proper response to him is to share that with other people. And so the primary tool that the devil uses against us as we do that is discouragement. It's as simple as that. It's not being possessed or some dramatic thing is not... The primary way the devil deals with us is just discourage us. Nothing that you do is really that important. You can't save souls. You're not articulate. You're not holy. You're not a good theologian. You don't know what you're talking about. And these are things almost that we feel like we're saying them to ourselves, but certainly that demonic voice is trying to discourage us. It's kind of cooperating with our own self-criticism and building on it. And so the sacraments are the essential key. And the sacraments are, you can't do the sacraments alone. So community is essential. That is being connected to other people who pray, who try to share the gospel of Jesus Christ, who try to live that way. The only real tool for overcoming the power of discouragement in this world is the power of the sacrament and the power of the communal Catholic life. You got to find other people who you can share this with, who can kind of lift you up and go, yeah, I know nobody has responded in the last 6 months to any, you know, like that'll happen sometimes. Every time you've tried to talk about Jesus, people have shut you down. Just keep going. You don't know what seeds you're planting, and the next person might be the one that you're going to have a beautiful, encouraging conversation with. If you don't have somebody to help you in that way, it's very, you know, Jesus sent them out two by two. He didn't send them out one by one. We need each other, and we need Jesus in the sacraments. If you're not living the sacramental life, you're opening yourself to discouragement. Go to confession, go to communion, live the sacramental life of prayer and charity, and that discourage, you can fight that discouragement.
You know, I remember about 20 years ago, I was having a conversation with my spiritual advisor about evangelizing the faith. And I remember saying to him, I don't even know really what that looks like, you know. And I go, how am I supposed to get people to convert or grow closer to the faith as Catholics? He goes, you're missing the point. He goes, you don't have to sit there and talk about the catechism in the Catholic Church and what the church teaches. You still start talking to them about Jesus. And it was like a light bulb, you know, that epiphany moment. I'm like, oh, I could do that. I could talk to them about Jesus. It was, it relieved me of that kind of stress, right? It's like, that's not that complicated. And just praying for people. You know, another thing is the storytelling and the listening, because Jesus was a master storyteller, and Jesus was, you know, a master listener as a leader, and those stories help connect us. We could tell our own almost reversion or conversion or our encounter with Christ story as a way to share Jesus too, right?
That is right. And you, that what you said about listening is the key to everything that I learned from Steve. It's not like I didn't know it, but Steve knows it in a way that it's organized and clear. And listening is the beginning. And most people find that a tremendous relief, that the beginning of evangelization is not proclaiming. That's not how it starts. The beginning of evangelization is listening to the other person. So Steve, for example, will, when he sees somebody that he's moved by the Spirit, he carries miraculous medals in his pocket. Hmm. He'll just go to somebody who, you know, maybe there he's having a conversation with somebody, and he'll say, I'm a Catholic, and these are miraculous medals. I like to give them to people. If you'd like them, it's a Catholic thing, and I'd like to give it to you. Now, he's said the word Catholic several times in there. He's set the stage for them. Maybe they'll say, you know, I don't really believe in God, or, you know, I'm not a Christian, or more likely, I'm not a Catholic, and I don't really know what to do with that. Okay, so now you can listen to their story. You know, you made an offer to give them something, and that's what Steve would call the icebreaker. But now you don't turn to the proclamation of the gospel. You turn to listening. You go, oh, well, where do you go to church? Or what do you believe? Or what happened that you ended up not believing in God? Or what do you believe about God? You know, whatever the next appropriate question is to what they said, this allows you a chance to get to know them. And this allows for what Pope Paul VI calls the unique word, the unique evangelizing word that passes from one heart to another. You have a unique word because you have a unique experience of Jesus, but the word you will pass to this person is unique to them, and it can only be unique to them if you spent a little bit of time getting to know them, listening to their story.
Yeah, that's such a great point. Yeah, and you, as a coach, I'm trained to hear certain words, and you kind of mirror it back to the person, and so they know you're listening. So you're listening for those particular words that they say where they're connected to, and you share that word back with them in your response to them. I mean, it's a great tactic, Kalaitis, who we're talking to, host of Catholic Answers, with this wonderful new stocking stuffer book, In Time for Christmas, right? How to Talk About Jesus with Anyone. What surprised you the most, Cy, when you were writing this book with Steve Dawson?
You know, it's funny. The thing that surprised me the most is he said the main objection. Like, I was talking to him about what are the objections people make. And, you know, the most common objection, or one of the most common objections, certainly, that Steve has heard over the years is, I'm an introvert. And that's, and I was very surprised by that, but it's like, I'm an introvert, meaning I can't do this. I can't talk to other people about this. And people don't realize what a superpower being an introvert is. If you're an introvert, you're better at the first step of evangelization than the extrovert. You know that a lot of people don't like extroverts. A lot of people prefer introverts. And so the first step of evangelization is listening. The second step of evangelization is making friends or building bridges of friendship. If you're an introvert, you can do that in a way with individual people that probably many extroverts can't do because they don't listen, they talk, they perform, they entertain. You know, they're wonderful people, but being an introvert is not an obstacle. It's an opportunity in evangelization.
Mm. That's a great perspective. I've never heard it that way. And I have to be cognizant of that, too, because I am an extrovert, you know, and so taking the time, I've had to train myself over the years as a reporter to really listen. That's part of what I do, and more so as a coach. How to talk about Jesus with anyone, tested techniques for planting seeds and saving souls. You know, I was just thinking, too, Cy, this would be a great book for like a mom's group or a dad's club or like a book club to have a discussion, and then you test this out and come back and report to each other.
I'm so glad you said that, because that's exactly, I think, how both Steve and I would love the book to be used. But this is a book for groups, you know, your Bible study group or your faith group that you meet with, because the best way to make progress as an evangelist is to get input back from other people. You go, you know, one of the techniques in the book is to learn to say to people, can I just share with you one good reason why I believe in God? Now, that's not the first thing you say to a person, but after the building of the friendship and the listening to the other person, you will know what the thing is to say, or you'll have a clue. And it's called the one good reason method. Well, if you're in a group of people, you can try that out on them. You can go, well, here's what I would say. I would say, can I give you one good reason why I believe in God? And then maybe your way of doing it would be you would talk about the beauty in the world. And another person's way of doing it would be they would talk about how God answered their prayer at a very difficult time. And another person would have another take. And this will enrich you if you practice. Like, we can practice saying these things. If you've got a group to do the book with, that practice will be probably the most important part of it.
Cy, we have about a minute left with you less than. What else do you want to share with our listeners before we let you go?
You know, the main thing I would like to say is it's practical. Like, the part of the reason why you might have fear of evangelizing, you might have a fear of talking to others about Jesus, is that you don't have the practical experience of how to do it. And it's not what you think it is. It's fun, actually. It's friendly. It's engaging. It's about building relationships and friendships. It's not as bad as you think it is.
Cy, I'm sorry, we got to let you go. How to talk about Jesus with anyone, Cy Kellett. Stay with us. We're going to wrap up after the break. We're wrapping up on here on EW10 Radio Extra. Thank you to Cy Kellett for being with us, host of Catholic Answers, the new book, How to Talk About Jesus with Anyone, available at the EW10 Religious Catalog, a great place to look for those wonderful Christmas gifts and stocking stuffers. And this book, How to Talk About Jesus with Anyone, is one of those great books. If you want my blog for my coach's commentary, I get asked that a lot. You can go to epiphanycommunications.com, and there's a copy of my blog and what I talked about today and yesterday. And then Doug Keck will be with Teresa Tamayo tomorrow, the inside word at EWTN. Doug Keck will be joining T. She'll be back in her host chair. Dr. Tim Gray, president of the Augustine Institute and the 2027 Good News Cruise speaker. Teresa will be talking with him. And she will also be talking with Katie Glenn Daniel from the Susan B. Anthony, Director of Legal Affairs and Policy Council. Americans want safety protocols on the abortion pill. So join T tomorrow. She'll be back in her host chair here on Catholic Connection. Always a pleasure to sit in for Teresa Tamayo here on EWTN and be with all of you. I think I'll be back sometime later this month. I'm not exactly sure when, but I will be with you. Again, if you want to read my blogs, which are my coach's commentaries, my Epiphany Insights, they're called on my website, you can go to epiphanycommunications.com. As always, I remind my listeners to connect, communicate, and to collaborate with their Catholic community. Go out and make a blessed day.